The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
KMED, here's Bill Meyer.
Good morning. Happy to take your calls on this Find Your Phone Friday, 770-5633. Rick Manning will be joining me. This time he's out on the West Coast today instead of being in the nation's capital, taking care of some family issues. So we're going to get him up early, at least according to West Coast time. Normally he's, you know, over there, you know, talking to me at 9:30, you know, 6:30 Pacific. But yeah, we'll certainly catch up on the, the spending bills going down in flames. The first one blown up by President Trump. You ever start getting that feeling that Elon Musk is getting way more influence in what's going on than he should be? We might talk about that. I'm not a big fan of having a guy who is arguably, well, even he admits he's on the spectrum, doing a lot of setting of policy. Not that that spending bill didn't deserve to be blown up, but I would have preferred to have heard it just from President Trump, wouldn't you? I'm dead serious about this this kind of stuff. I did not vote for Elon Musk. Of course, Elon Musk may have thinks maybe he thinks that people voted for him because he ended up putting in, what was it, $250 million into the Trump campaign. So I guess I suppose that allows you to be able to buy some privilege. But still, Elon's in the news too much. Wouldn't you agree? Can we agree on that too much? It should be if there's going to be something coming out of the incoming Trump administration, it should be coming out of President Trump, don't you think? We can talk about that, 770-5633-770-KMED. We can actually give you a little bit of good news, or maybe I think the way of looking at this is it's not as bad as it originally was going to be. Your electric bill is going to be going up next month. Now, we've been talking about this this issue off and on. It was a number of months ago that Pacific Power asked for about an 18% power boost for January, going into effect January. This is after increases that they already had done a little bit earlier, right? So then, of course, everybody threw up on them, and they backed that down. They said, okay, well, we don't need 18%. We only need 11%. So I guess apparently this just started the negotiation process with the Public Utility Commission. Then it was down to 11%. Public Utility Commission then cut it back. They said, all right, the overall rate increase we're going to permit you to do is 8.5%. But there are other increases and other things that for we little people, we little home apartments and residential customers, we pay more than everybody else, apparently. We're going to go up about 10%. So it's going to be about 10% more for Pacific Power's wonderfully green and coal-free power. And if you look into some of the details about this, it's actually quite interesting. I know some of the details, you look at a press release from the Public Utilities Commission and your eyes start glazing over. And my eyes were glazing over. But then you see certain little kernels of truth that that are quite interesting. Like one of them, they're talking about how, you know, there's money that's they're going to raise your rates in order to have the, you know, the ethical, the good decommissioning of coal, the getting rid of coal. There's a certain name they have for it in the release. I forget what this was, but it was like, oh, isn't it wonderful that we're getting rid of all of this dirty coal power? Yeah, the dirty coal power that was about, 2 cents a kilowatt hour. You know, that was about as cheap and reliable and was there all the time. And nobody worried about, oh, boy, I tell you, the sun went out. That means the power is going to go away, which is the way our power grid is right now. But once again, your power goes up because, you know, the renewable energy is just so darn cheap. It is so darn cheap. It is practically free. You know how they do this. And the way the renewable energy contracts are written, too, in which they're paid, well, we got to pay you even when the wind's not blowing and the sun's not shining and everything. It's just it is an interesting scam. I don't know if there's enough that President Trump can do to unwind the scam that the West Coast governors have pretty much cobbled together for the net zero plans or not. But boy, wouldn't it be great. I think one of the first things that President Trump could do that would be wonderful would be just to get rid of the exemption that allows California to write the EPA rules for everybody else in this country. Because California writes it for the cars, you know, the pollution controls for the cars. And then the car makers say, well, gosh, you're the biggest state. We might as well just do it like that for everybody. And then everybody else has to suffer with the garbage that Gavin Newsom ends up, you know, putting into place. Speaking of garbage put in place by Gavin Newsom, he has declared an emergency over bird flu. And he says he's declaring it only as a precaution, just a precaution, nothing to be concerned about. And let me just get a little bit more on this one. This according to Epic Times. It comes as a person in Louisiana has been hospitalized with the first severe illness caused by bird flu in the entire country. So one person hospitalized in the entire country. And Gavin Newsom is declaring an emergency over bird flu. But anyway, Newsom says in his statement about the emergency, it's a targeted action to ensure government agencies will have the resources and flexibility they need to respond quickly to this outbreak. In other words, if lots of bird flu started breaking out on the farms everywhere, I guess they have had some bird flu detected on some dairy farms and dairy cows in some farms in Southern California. But without the emergency declaration, the state would have been powerless to have done anything. No reported cases of person-to-person transmission in California. This according to the office, and people who have been exposed to the virus in the state were exposed to infected cows and infected cows only. So there you go. But building on California's testing and monitoring system, the largest in the nation, we are committed to further protecting public health, supporting our agricultural industry, and ensuring that Californians have access to accurate, up-to-date pharmaceutical information. I added that pharmaceutical part. But when they talk about up-to-date information, because Gavin Newsom, as you can recall, during COVID time, he was one of the follow the science. Not about what science actually does, but what science believes. The people in science believes. So remember that. And so it's up-to-the-date information that the government wants you to believe. A future PSYOP? I don't know. But you heard about it here on Friday morning, 18 minutes after 6. All right. So we've had two spending bills shut down. They're gone. The first one that that Trump and Musk ended up criticizing, that was the one, the 1,500 pager. That was down in flames. Then there was the one that was only about 110 pages, but it was still about suspending the debt ceiling over the next couple of years. And that went down in flames, too. Bunch of Republicans ended up voting against this. Now they're going to try again and do a quick coddle together, a stopgap. 7 o'clock, I think, is when they're going to start, voting on that, if they're able to bring this to the floor. I know there's some listeners yelling at me yesterday. I forget where that one fellow was, Rogue River, someplace like that, telling me to shut up. But it's not a matter of what MAGA wants necessarily, and that's not because I wouldn't want MAGA to get what MAGA wants, but it's a math problem, and this is not a particularly friendly deal. It's not even what you could get through the House of Representatives. It's what you can get through the Senate, because the Senate requires 60 votes. Now, when you do things in regular order, in regular budgetary processes, which they could do once Trump is in office next year, then you only need 51 senators to pass this. But right now, you need 60. And when everybody's saying, fight, 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 and get a clean one through, you're not going to get a clean one through. And I'm just trying to say, so you've got to shut it down. Now, if you're okay with shutting it down, that's fine. I'm perfectly okay with, I'd like to shut down the federal government over about the next 6, 7, 8, 9 months. We'll get rid of that deficit real fast. But, you know, I'm being unreasonable when I say things like that. But I'm just saying it's a math problem. And some folks think that Mike Johnson can just whip everybody and bend them to his will. It's like all it takes is a couple of people. Chip Roy is an example. President Trump going after Chip Roy yesterday. He was one of the only true fiscal conservatives out there saying, hey, I'm not going to vote for to get rid of the debt limit or to raise the debt ceiling unless we're going to have some real credible ways of reducing the spending. I'm not going to do it. People didn't send me to do this. He's representing his people. And then, of course, President Trump going after him. And so I guess what is it? Is it Elon Musk going to write a check out of his X account then to primary Chip Roy? It makes me wonder if the Trump administration, this is something I'm going to have to talk with Rick about, because, hey, listen, the Trump people and Doge and everybody have been talking a good game, but if you're going to go after Chip Roy, who is truly a fiscal conservative, are you guys really serious about reining in the spending? I have my doubts. And the reason I have my doubts is because You could do one of two things. You can either rein in the spending, or you can goose the economy. And if you're going to goose the economy, you probably don't want to throw a bunch of, hundreds of thousands of workers, government workers out on the street at the same time you're trying to supposedly goose the economy. It's a really tough balancing act, like I mentioned yesterday. So anyway, we can talk about things like that throughout the morning and anything else on your mind. But, when Trump goes directly after Chip Roy, a true Freedom Caucus conservative, a guy that really says, no, I really don't want us, we have to rein in our spending. The way that you rein in spending is you rein in the spending. There's no other way around that. You just have to do it. It's not fun. And so Trump talking as if he's going to primary him. It's like, man, Don, you need every vote you can get in this new Congress. You need more friends. What, Elon Musk doesn't like you, and then out comes the primary thing? I didn't elect him. I'll continue to pick that scab over time. Here we have some guy jumping up and down on the stage on the spectrum, and we're going to put him in charge? I hope not. But people are whispering because that's the way it looks like sometimes. Hey, who's really the incoming president? This is the Bill Myers Show. You're on KMED and KBXG.
Did you pick up a few more leaves and debris than you would have liked this fall?
Hi, I'm Mark with Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, and I'm on KMED.
24 minutes after 6. I got home yesterday afternoon. Lindy and I always talk about the news a little bit. Get together, have a tea, something like that, do a little dinner, that kind of thing. And she says, oh, wow, did you read that Wall Street Journal report about Joe Biden and how the staff was having to tiptoe around him, and he just didn't have it? And it's, honey, yeah, I knew. But, of course, this is stuff we've been talking about for how many months? It just ended up talking about, and everyone was going over this on all the talk shows, the national talk shows. It's kind of like, all right, this was really news. No, it's just the truth coming out after having been called conspiracy theorists all those months. Everybody knew that Joe wasn't in charge, still isn't in charge, that kind of thing. Andrew Stiles ended up doing a collection, though, of everybody that was saying that anybody that said that there was something wrong with Joe was a conspiracy theorist. There's just something wrong with you. And he compiled a small sample of the lies told by people who clearly knew that they were lying. We had Vice Presidential Kamala Harris saying the way that the president's demeanor in that report was characterized, this was about the HER report, remember that report? It could not be more wrong on the facts and clearly politically motivated and gratuitous. We had First Lady Jill Biden. Joe is 81, that's true, but he's 81 doing more in an hour than most people do in a day. You had Alejandro Mayorkas. Remember this one? The most difficult part about a meeting with President Biden is preparing for it because he's sharp, intensely probing, and detail-oriented and focused. Oh, this is so funny. Remember, these are all the people that said we were all crazy, right? Ian Sams, a White House spokesmouth. Inaccurate, gratuitous, and wrong. Biden campaign spokesman T.J. Ducklow, gratuitous and sensationalist attacks on the president's age. Senator Chris Murphy, Joe Biden is incredibly competent and he's incredibly effective. Senator John Ossoff from Georgia, I found him to be sharp, focused, impressive, formidable, and effective. J.B. Pritzker, remember him? He is on the ball. The man knows more than most of us have forgotten. Representative Ro Khanna from California. He's completely mentally sharp. James Clyburn. I do not believe that Joe Biden has a problem leading for the next 4 years. Joe Scarborough, my favorite. If you can't handle the truth, this version of Biden intellectually, analytically, is the best Biden ever. President Joe Biden, I know what the hell I'm doing. My memory is fine. There we go. Thank you, Andrew. I always appreciate that. Thanks. I appreciate the laugh on a Friday morning. We could use that. Brad's here. Hello, Brad. You wanted to actually take us back in history to today, way back in the day, a very, very big day, World War II history, isn't it?
Bill, good morning. I sure did. You know, here in the comfortable world that we inhabit now, you know, we've got our coffee ready every morning. We get out of our warm beds and just enjoy our lives. Between 16 December 1944 and 25 January 1945, our soldiers in Germany were engaged in the bloodiest conflict of that war and the third bloodiest conflict of all of our military engagements. It was called the Battle of the Bulge.
Yep.
And Bill, we love heroes, and I know that you love the military as much as I do. My dad was 19 years old at the time. Now, my dad did not serve in that conflict, but my dad served in the U.S. Army Air Corps. And the reason that battle was so bad is that the weather would not allow our air resources to get in there and do what needed to be done. So our guys are in there. They're freezing to death. The weather is unseasonably cold. The Germans have and they had better tanks than we did, mm-hmm. and it was a tank war. George Patton was on the way, but he was dealing, again, it's wintertime. It's in the forest. It's the most miserable conditions you can imagine. And a miracle happens. A miracle happens on Christmas Day, Bill, 1944. The clouds clear, and our air resources can now go to work, and that conflict comes to an end. But it was a really, really serious thing. If Patton's armored, if those our tanks and if the air guys could not have done what they did, it would have been really, really bad. So I just think
that's something to remember as we sit around here and complain about a. Well, let me say an incompetent president or something like that. There are worse fates, right? And you think about what was going on in 1944 for those young men in those days, what they did, what they had to do.
They saved the world for the rest of us. And, you know, what a wonderful thing to remember that, you know, those heroes are why we have everything we have today.
Fair enough. That's a good memory. So your dad worked it, or your father, rather, was in the Army Air Corps at that point?
U.S. Army Air Corps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, my grandfather, he served under Patton. And let me tell you, the stories he would tell me about Patton and was like, you know, he said he would never tell us to do something or order us to do something that he himself wasn't willing to do and get up there and do it himself. You know, he's just that kind of guy. He was a soldier, wow. Really. And they said we would do absolutely anything that guy told us to do. We had that much faith and belief in him and knowledge in his leadership. I'm paraphrasing a little bit. You know, this is what my grandfather was telling me, but he had nothing but good things to say. And somewhere in my memorabilia, I got to dig that up again, but I have a picture of Patton pinning a medal on my grandfather's chest. It's pretty darn cool.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And the but the thing is, though, he ended up getting a medal for this, but it was kind of by accident. You know, remember the story? Did you ever hear me telling the story about how my grandfather ended up almost getting killed near the very end of the war? Did you ever hear me telling you that story or not?
I have not heard that story.
Okay, all right. Well, my grandfather was a cut-up. He was serving under Patton. It was almost the end of the war. Everybody knew the end of the war was coming. And so my grandfather was a card, always telling jokes and laughing and doing things like that. And everybody was blowing off steam. Well, he and his buddies ended up getting separated from the division or from their group. And so they ended up marching right into German territory, German-held territory at that point. And they didn't realize it, that they were not behind the American lines any longer. And they're laughing, and they're telling jokes, and they're slapping each other on the back and smoking cigarettes. You know how it goes, how soldiers could do this on a time off. And, well, the German scouts are in the trees, I guess, over the horizon, and they're looking at these guys. And they nobody had surrendered at this point, but they figured if these crazy Americans were out there laughing and telling jokes and just walking towards them, in the logical German mind, the only reason that they would be that lackadaisical and having fun is because there must be a hell of a lot more American soldiers over that hill that they couldn't see over. And so all these German soldiers ended up putting out the white flag and they surrendered to my grandfather and all his buddies. And so he brings all of these. I guess they were pretty much done with the war, too, I would imagine. But they could have just shot him in the head, boom, from a couple hundred yards. It would have been all over. And we wouldn't be talking, you know, about that that story today. But because they were so, and as he said, we were acting so stupid that it ended up being brilliant because the Germans saw us and logically thought that there must be a lot more of us. Otherwise, we would be acting scared, that kind of thing.
What an amazing. That's got to be one for the ages. That's Wow.
Yeah.
What a miracle.
Yeah, but he ended up getting a medal for bringing in all these German prisoners too. So it's like, hey, whatever, you know. Such as war, right? That kind of thing. So that was a funny, could have been a tragic World War II story, but ended up having a good outcome. So, Brad, thanks for letting us know more about Battle of the Bulge, something worth noting today in 1944. This is the Bill Myers Show, and you're on KMED.
This holiday season, Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. wants to extend a heartfelt thank you.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
637.
Craziest party that could ever be. Don't turn on the lights, cause I don't want to see. I'm not told and that's come.
Rick Manning's theme, of course. He's the president of Americans for Limited Government. DailyTorch.com. The D.C. Swamp Update. Of course, this time being reported from the West Coast this morning here. Rick, welcome back. Good to have you on, sir.
I'm glad to be on. Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
I didn't hear my intro music. What happened?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't have.
I was totally stunned. There was
I did not have a button pushed in, so you didn't hear it down the phone. Everybody else did. Everybody,
okay, that's
it happened.
Because I wanted consistency here. You know, we have a swamp that we have to identify, and if we don't have the Three Dog Night song playing in advance about the craziest place I've ever been, it just doesn't seem real.
And it does seem to be getting even crazier.
I was
having a conversation yesterday, and I think people were misinterpreting some of what I was saying, and as when that got blown up, when the first bill got blown up,
right.
And it was a bad bill. But everybody knew it was a bad bill. But I try to let people know or people understand the way the process works is that it doesn't matter if it's a good bill if it doesn't pass the Senate. Because, you know, in this you have to have 60 votes and there wouldn't be 60 votes for a clean good bill. It's just the way it is, you know. And then and people would say like I don't want to fight. Oh, no, I'm fine with fighting. But if you want to shut it down, just understand you're going to shut it down. All right. And so and if you're going to shut it down, chances are the media will beat you about the head with it. And just understand that. And there are no good choices. Well, there are no solutions, I guess, Rick. When I'm saying there are no solutions, there are only choices. And the choices all have various issues. Would that be a fair assessment of what's going on there in the swamp right now?
Yes, I think that is fair assessment. But I think there's, you know, at some level, all legislation comes down to numbers.
Right.
And you either can put together a majority or you can't. And the challenge that any Republican speaker has, doesn't matter who what the name is a certain number of Republicans have said, we will not vote for a continuing resolution no matter what. Okay, we want 12 appropriations bills.
In other words, we want to do budgeting the way we should, right. So this way we don't have these big, ridiculous Christmas tree bills, right?
But then, some of those same Republicans who say they want to vote for a CR also won't vote for the appropriations bills because they don't like the stuff that had to be put in the appropriations bills to get the votes. So, and when you have a five-vote, as they have now, a five-vote majority, and soon to be two-vote majority, five people who say, I won't vote for a continuing resolution no matter what, I want a full year continuing resolution, as Thomas Massie says, that didn't take very many of them to make it so you can't pass even a clean CR with Republican votes because they won't vote for a CR.
The votes won't exist. They just
don't exist. So what do you do if you can shut down the government for, you know, 9-10 months and you're shutting down a small amount of the government, but there is some hardship that occurs with that. We say, yeah, let's do that. But remember we'd still be running a massive deficit because the fact of the matter is the Congress is only appropriating about 30% of the money that we spend. And the rest of it is not out of spend through Social Security, Medicare, food stamps, and like.
Those kind of bills or those kind of spending or that kind of spending is almost automatic, right?
It is. They can do something about it, but they don't do it through the regular appropriations process.
Got it.
So you have to take a separate bill that's focused on that, and you have to get 60 votes in the Senate, and good luck. So at least good luck with getting anything that actually is reformed that will work. And not just more taxes.
All right. Now, let me just talk about Speaker Johnson, if you don't mind. And
sure.
and not that I wouldn't have liked to have seen a better bill come out there, but I just don't know if people realize the impossible task that has been thrown in, that Speaker Johnson is up against on trying to get these votes, because it's not like, you know, you can just order 215 people to vote your way or 220 people to vote right. your way. Their votes are their votes. And it's a math problem. And a lot of folks are thinking that for some reason he's just an incredibly weak speaker. But I think he kind of has a weak hand. Is that really the reality where we are? I'm just looking at the, once again, where are the votes? Where are the votes, buddy? You know,
he has a pair of twos. Okay.
He has a pair of twos. Sitting, okay.
He's sitting with a pair of twos. And that's the power of his hand. And everybody around the table knows he's got a pair of twos. As it stands right now, just with this Congress, it changes a little bit in January 3. He has fewer majority, but he's had more impact on who gets what committee assignments and the like.
Right.
So that gives him a little bit more, not power, but at least influence. As he sits right now, he's a speaker who nobody wanted. So he's a compromise speaker because they couldn't get anybody else who could get the votes to take the job. So he happens to be a really good guy on a personal level.
Yeah,
I am a big fan of Speaker Johnson. I've spent real time with him. I've prayed with him. He is an honest Christian man who's trying to do the right thing. Okay, so and that may not work in Washington. Okay, I mean it's hard, and he's trying to do the right thing, and he's working 24/7 trying to get it done. And you know, the very simple point is, President Trump said, "Okay, I want a clean CR with the debt ceiling taken care of." He didn't really care how the debt ceiling was taken care of. He just wanted it taken care of.
Now, you see, when he says he wants the debt ceiling taken care of, that this is the part that makes me wonder. He wants the debt ceiling raised on the Joe Biden watch, and I understand why.
He wants to get it out of the way so he doesn't have a massive fight on something that you used to be. The debt ceiling was a way that conservatives.
Would keep a lid on things.
Would
keep
a lid
on spending.
Things. And now is the way that the Democrats, the banks, who all the money's owed to, will blow up. They're trying to blow up the conservatives. If they don't, we're going to shut down the world and everything if you don't raise the debt ceiling and you don't agree to all the spending. So it's now the power on the debt ceiling has completely shifted to the banks who hold the debt and the foreign nations who hold the debt. And so it's actually a gun to America's head. So it's just. What was intended and started as a good thing has actually become a little more challenging because of how much debt we have. But when you get – so it's a balancing act. Point on this thing is over 30 Republicans voted against the clean CR with a debt ceiling.
This was the one that President Trump backed yesterday, right? That's the one he wanted, right?
Yeah, so it didn't pass. You know, they could lose 4 votes, and they lost 30. And over the last 2 years – there has not been a single government funding bill, apart from some individual appropriations bills, which overall, you know, getting the whole thing done, that has passed where it didn't need Democrat votes to pass.
And yet I will see in MAGA world like Darren Beatty over on Revolver, and I read Darren. There's a lot of stuff he does there that I enjoy. But I could swear that a lot of those folks there, even though I read it every day, I don't think they can count. Or they're unable to count votes. Am I wrong? I'm wrong about that. You know, I know he's right.
Well, I think they can count votes, and the challenge. And listen, my best friends in Congress are doing this. Okay, so mm-hmm. This is just understand. This is a challenge. They've made a promise to their constituents. I will not vote for a CR.
Right.
They take a look in the last set of appropriations bills out of the Appropriations Committee, all 12, had an amazing set of riders and things to stop big government, stop DEI, stop the ESG movement. That was all some really, really important things were in those bills. But they didn't like the top line number, you know, how much they were spending. And I understand that. But there was a Democrat Senate and there was a Democrat president. And so the fights were over the riders, not over the money, and trying to win some of the riders. That was where the fights were on those bills, because they were going to win. The other side's going to win on the money, because we don't have the votes on the money on our side of the aisle. We have the votes on the riders. So you try to rein in government by using the appropriations process to stop certain things that happen that are really bad. And but if you're not willing to vote for the final product, you know, whatever the compromise is, because it
and whatever the cost, and it will cost too much. We know it will cost too much. It's
we
just baked in the cake.
It's a given. It's a, you know, and so you know that. So if you're not willing to vote for the final product, you don't have a seat at the table negotiating. You can't. You know, if the assumption is you're not voting for it no matter what, they don't care what you say. And that's how the people, the most conservative and the people who really get the danger we're in.
Is that the Chip Roy point of view?
I've been longtime friends with Chip.
I like Chip. The thing is, he seems to have a good sense, a set of principles. But, you know, when you have President Trump calling him out there, I'm thinking, oh, man, you know, this is like, once again, the war on the Freedom Caucus.
Well,
part two.
Understand. Chip has never supported Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He for a lot of reasons, Chip. But maybe a year ago, I tried to explain. Maybe 6 months ago, the difference between Chip and most of the members of Congress on the Republican side is that Chip Roy and probably 25 members on the House side look at the deficit and they say, this is a emergency that we have to deal with right now. This is urgent. We have to deal with it right now. Unfortunately, a majority of the Republicans, not just a majority, 218 votes in the House don't agree with that. So what Chip is trying to do is he's trying to up the urgency on dealing with the deficit, dealing with the different problems that arise because of that. And so he's very, very good. Smart guy. He knows government. He was the chief of staff on the Senate side. So he really knows how the system works. So he works really hard to try to ring the alarm bells of what's going on.
Was this the time to do that, though?
I think it's a mistake.
Okay.
The reality is, and now I'm going to go directly to the question that you initially asked was Speaker Johnson.
Yeah, will Speaker Johnson be able to survive all this? You have to wonder.
He better. Okay. And the reason he better, because if he doesn't, Trump's agenda is dead in Congress.
Really?
Yeah. Because here's what, think about this. Trump has 13 months max to get any kind of legislative agenda done. If they start out on January 3 and they spend a month with Trump's appointments from the House are approved by the Senate, those people are no longer in the House with a one-vote majority. One-vote majority, 216 to 215 is what it's slated to be.
Man.
You need to have every single Republican vote for a speaker. There's nobody who gets that consensus. There's just nobody who gets that consensus. So you end up with an absolute rudderless ship. And here's what they want to do in the first 100 days. And this is just...
Okay, before you go there in the first 100 days, the Democrats, I'd be willing to bet you, would much rather have a rudderless ship, because that's the way they kill the Trump agenda from
the
back door.
Trump 100%.
Yeah.
And you know what? They didn't murder it. The Republicans just suicided it. So that's, you know, they can point across the aisle and say... Republicans killed the Trump agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that would be very effective in a 2026 campaign ad aimed at Trump, you know, Trump voters, independent Trump voters say, hey, it's a Republican majority who killed the agenda. So that's what they're hoping will happen politically. And they will have a landslide victory in 2026 for the second 2 years of the Trump presidency.
Yeah, so you could lose the House, what little House majority you have you didn't get the Trump agenda put in place. And you've been talking about on DailyTorch.com all these weeks now and months, saying that you got to go big on these tax and economic plans and the reform plans. You got to go big and be willing to risk losing the majority in 2026 in the House, but only because you're going big and making big things happen and big reform possible and in law, right?
And yes, and this is the art of being in politics, and this is really important to understand the swamp. As you said, sometimes you don't have, there's no perfect choices. What you have to do is say, you have to triage the places where you have the most damage being done and deal with those and be able to risk your political career to deal with those, because the reason those places exist is because there's constituencies that support them. So you have to be willing to do that. And you have a chance to do that in the first 100 days of the Trump administration. You have a vehicle to do that in the Budget Reconciliation Act, which is simply a vote that allows you to say, we've got a budget, but we don't like how it's arranged, and we're now going to rearrange the budget. You're not going to cut the budget on that. You're just rearranging the budget.
Now, that you can pass with what, 50? You can pass with 51 senators, right?
50 votes in the Senate with the vice president.
Okay, there you go.
And that's how the Democrats passed the Inflation Reduction Act, was that system. So that's how they did that. And we have the opportunity, and we failed, remember, when Mitt Romney voted against it. Mm-hmm. We failed to do the pretty large Obamacare repeal using that same system.
But this is a considerably friendlier Senate majority coming in,
presumably.
Right? Okay.
I don't think we have a governing majority.
Okay, well, how about less openly hostile? How about that in the Senate?
I'll go with that.
All right.
The point is, in the first, given the realities, you have a short period of time to do what you want to get done. And in this case, what I've heard out of Johnson's mouth is, I'm not supposed to say it, but I'll say it anyway, is on January 7th, he plans to have a budget passed by the House, mm-hmm. before Trump's even in office, a budget passed by the House, send it to the Senate. The idea is for the Senate to then pass that same budget. Once you have a budget passed, you can do this budget reconciliation project idea. And so you pass a budget early, then you do the budget reconciliation, which allows you to do the following things. You can defund anything you want to in there. You can cut taxes on anybody you want to, and you can raise taxes on anybody you want to. You can cut out regulations that are very expensive, and you can just cut them out and say, these are not, Congress doesn't approve these are gone. There's a vast array of things you can do with that. And you can cut anything in government you want. You can put all those riders in, and you can basically say, gee whiz, it's interesting that the Supreme Court said that the Clean Air Act allows California to eliminate gas-powered cars.
Yeah, make the rules for everybody else. We get rid of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just change that. There's all sorts of things you can do in that. The only thing that's a hindrance is in the Senate. The one problem in the Senate is the parliamentarian can make the decision. The parliamentarian can make the decision that, oh, this doesn't save enough money or it doesn't cost enough money to be able to be included in that. 50 senators plus one can override the parliamentarian.
And that is an amazing power that we would be irresponsible to just blow up right now, right?
Exactly right. So now the truth is we probably won't have the votes in the Senate to just tell a parliamentarian that we don't care what they think, but we can win some of those fights. Mm-hmm. You want to have the MAGA thing happen. You want to have the Elon Musk stuff happen. You can't have the first 30 days of the House being arguing over,
Who's going to be the new speaker? Oh my gosh! Yeah. Okay, I understand where you're getting at here. You need some institutional certainty right now.
And so sometimes when you are in politics, you have to be able to look in further than the thing that's right in front of your nose, and say, "Gee, we have a bigger game to play here." And the bigger game is the getting the budget reconciliation and accomplishing as much of the Trump agenda as you can in the first 100 days, legislatively, mm-hmm. so that can't be written out of law by a future president. That's the big play. And we're goofing around, and that's why I haven't spent a lot of time. I haven't even written on the CR. Robert did a couple of days ago, but I haven't done anything in terms of writing on the CR, continuing resolution, because this is an insignificant piece of legislation that's going to last 3 months, and the only thing that mattered about it was to make it a 3-month bill so Trump could set the priorities for the last 6 months of this fiscal year. That's the only part that mattered to me. Make it 3 months. I don't care what you put in it. We can fix it all in 3 months. So that was
But the Republicans still voted that down, right?
Yes, they did. And Bill, I've been doing limited government stuff for almost my whole life in some way, shape, or form. I grew up on Ayn Rand and Atlas Shrugged and Fountainhead and the like. Okay. I argued throughout high school with teachers, through junior high school with teachers, through college with teachers. I got thrown out of a class, a political science class, because I was arguing with a teacher over stuff like this. So this is kind of endemic in my being. Sometimes in life, you take a look at a battle and you say, okay, I'm willing, put it in football context. I'm willing to run the ball into the line and get no yards, play after play, to set up a play-action pass where I score a touchdown. And they seem unable. They want to score a touchdown on every play. And you can't score a touchdown on every play. If you try to, you end up losing the game 57-0. So at some point, they got to get smart enough. I've been very critical of Cliff Benson and others who basically don't want to fight at all. But you have to be smart enough to figure out when the fight is and get yourself to that fight in as strong a position as possible so you can get the mat, so you can put as much on the field as possible and you can win as much as possible. And that's what they're risking. And that's just dumb.
When it comes to this fight to keep it open, that doesn't matter, right? Just to be clear.
Doesn't matter. Now they shut it down, it won't matter either.
Is it better just to shut up and wait right now?
It's better to get to January 3 when you have a Republican Congress, such as it is, and to January 20 when you have a Republican president, and where you don't have to negotiate with Joe Biden on everything, and you don't have to get it through the Biden White House. You don't have to get it through the Schumer Senate. At least you have more of a hammer than you do now. Mm-hmm. And it is far better to get there. And when you don't have a majority, and they truthfully, they've got after January 20, they'll likely have a one vote majority.
And there's also a bunch of people even there right now in Congress would normally be there, but people who lost or people who are retiring, they're not even there present to vote right now.
That is a challenge. Mm-hmm. So any given day, the Democrats can have a majority on the floor. So it is they have retirees and people who lost also, but it's a matter of, who cares enough to show up. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, being in the Republican House majority the last 2 years has not been fun for most of these people. And the reason they retired is they grew to hate it. So, they'll collect the paycheck till January 3, but they're not really all that excited to attend. So there's a lot of dynamics here, and ultimately, if you have a pair of twos, you really don't want to have to show that that's what you have before the hand is over. And what they're doing right now is they're exposing Mike Johnson as having a pair of twos. And oh, by the way, the next speaker, if there is another speaker, they won't even have a pair of twos because any one member will be able to take them down.
In other words, what I'm hearing here is that come on, Republicans, wise up and quit the call for blowing out Mike Johnson because you just blow out the Trump agenda.
Right.
Okay.
Anybody who's a parent knows that you have to pick your battles. Okay. And we need the Republicans in the House on Freedom Caucus and the ones who are on the left and the ones in the middle to become adults and grow up and take and do the things that are necessary to get to the fight that matters, which is the budget reconciliation, where we can get a significant part of the Trump agenda done legislatively, and then he can regulate the heck out of it. He can cut things. He can do all this other stuff. But if he's doing it with the stroke of a pen, it is undone by a stroke of a pen.
Yeah, executive orders won't cut it.
So we have to have lasting change, fundamental change that redirects this country. We need Congress to pass it. And the reason he doesn't have much time is because he is a lame duck. He doesn't get to run again. J.D. Vance gets to run again if he gets the nomination, but J.D. Vance isn't president. So Donald Trump is a lame duck on January 20th at 12:01 p.m. So he needs to get everything done now. And that's what we need to be done in terms of that's what we need to have done. And that's where the Republicans have to say, I'm going to put blinders on. I'm going to put a big gas mask on because I know this is a very smelly situation. And rather than trying to shovel one little pile away, I'm going to try to get to the point where I have a bulldozer. I can bulldoze a lot of it away. But they don't have a bulldozer now. They've got a shovel.
So wait until you can actually get the bulldozer in on the on the state. Yeah, I get it. Rick, I appreciate it. I know you're busy with some family stuff on the left coast right now. I look forward to see you writing about this. And we won't get a chance to talk until after the first of the year when I'm back from the Christmas break here. But Merry Christmas, and thanks for the analysis here. And just please understand, stop talking about killing Mike Johnson as Speaker. Quit saying that you're going to be able to get a clean resolution right now. You're not going to be able to, right? I just want to make sure The thing is to keep it going. Just come back on the 3rd of January and do it right, okay?
Survive until you can actually get something done.
All right.
You can't do that now. You can do it once Trump's president. Survive till January 20th and then deal with the problems.
All right. Very good. Good advice. Thank you. And please send that to Congress. I'm sure they'll listen, okay?
Some of them do. But let's hope enough of them do.
All right.
Anyway, thanks for all you guys do, and I appreciate it. Merry Christmas to everybody there in Medford and beyond. It's a true joy and blessing to be able to be on your air every week, and I just wish you and Linda a Merry Christmas.
Thank you very much. Merry Christmas to you, too. Take care, Rick.
Take care, Rick Manning,
President of Americans for Limited Government, DailyTorch.com. This is KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG Grants Pass.
Stephen Westfall, Inc. is thrilled to announce the winner of their second metal roof giveaway for a well-deserving veteran.